CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're headed to low Earth orbit, the ISS, where Bob Zimmerman is going to help us understand what is to be done with a leaking lifeboat, a Soyuz attached to ISS. And first, the question of why or how this happened. And second, what is to be done? Bob, a very good evening to you. Let's determine that there's a leak in the lifeboat. What is the explanation? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, since they first identified this leak last week, they've used the robot arm to get an inspection of the outside surface of the Soyuz capsule. And they have determined without question that the leak has occurred in the radiant cooling system that's on the outside of the service module of the Soyuz capsule. So this is not the descent module, which astronauts would use to return to Earth. And it involves the cooling system, not the oxygen and, you know, interior habitable space. And it's for the service module, which they abandon when they come back to Earth. And they appear that they found the hole is about 0.8 millimeters in size, a little less than a millimeter, so it's somewhat small, though that's a large hole to develop in space. And I'm getting a sense of a consensus this was a micrometeorite hit, which, once again, this is a somewhat large hole for a micrometeorite. They do happen almost routinely on the station. The Russians have learned in almost a quarter century of experience, more than a quarter century experience, that periodically you need to do a survey of the surface of your station to see the number, to get a census of the number of micrometeorite hits you've had, most of which don't do any really serious harm, but this one did. So they're now assessing the situation. The Russians say that by December 27th, they're going to make a decision about what they should do next, including whether or not this Soyuz is a lifeboat, whether it can actually be used to return people back to Earth. That might be possible. But they have to determine that. In the meantime, though, they're not taking chances. They've begun the preparation work on the next Soyuz that was going to launch in March to try to accelerate its launch into February. They can't really, they have to do stuff to get it ready, and the way they work, it just takes a certain amount of time. So the most they can gain is about a month. They are aiming for February 19th launch, if necessary. They might not change anything, remember. So if that's the case, they determine this is not a lifeboat and they can't get the Soyuz replacement of until February 19th. That means for the next 2 months about, there is not enough lifeboats for the people on board the station. So something catastrophic should occur. How do they get everyone back down? Well, I did some analysis, and there are two Dragon, there's one Dragon capsule there. There's a cargo Dragon. They could conceivably use the cargo Dragon and the crew Dragon to bring people back if necessary. Because the cargo Dragon is not intended for people, but it has a habitable space on the inside. And in an emergency, you use what you can. And so they could put more people in the Crew Dragon capsule. It was designed to carry six. They normally don't carry more than four. And they brought up three. And so they could conceivably put an extra two or three people in that, or they could use the cargo capsule. But that's unlikely. The more likely thing that's going to happen is that they'll send up the Soyuz early. But they might not. We'll have to wait and see how they determine whether or not this capsule is working or not.
Bob, how fast could SpaceX get a Falcon 9 or a Dragon to ISS in an emergency if they lost half the station? How fast? 4 hours? 10 hours?
Well, your estimate indicates our impression of the company, and I think it's an accurate impression. They wouldn't be able to do it in a day or two. It would probably take them several weeks. But they have four reusable capsules in their fleet. Only one is at ISS right now. They could, if necessary, I'm sure, get a Falcon 9 rocket ready relatively quick and put a capsule on top of it relatively quick. And they almost certainly, I think, could get it up there before the Russians can. However, you'd have to pay them. The Russians, this is part of their warranty. They've got to replace this Soyuz. So it doesn't cost NASA anything for this situation. And if the situation is under control, why spend money? And that's a reasonable position actually to take if the situation is under control. If it isn't under control and the capsules that are up there now cannot get everybody back, then yes, you might turn to SpaceX and say, get a capsule going quick. And they could conceivably get it done. I'll bet you within 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I'll bet at the most.
We're headed to Wallops Island. A delay. Rocket Lab. Why, Bob?
Oh, this is a sad tale. It has nothing to do with private enterprise. It has to do with the government. Rocket Lab has been trying to make its first launch out of the Virginia Wallops Island facility, which is now a commercial spaceport. It's been trying to do its first launch out of there now for two and a half years, pretty much. They were going to do it 2.5 years ago, and suddenly they canceled. And they didn't say why they canceled. So for a long time, it was puzzling. Why was this delayed? Why was this delayed? And then suddenly, about a year ago, I discovered that the reason is because NASA and the FAA were redoing the flight termination software that's used to destroy the rocket should it begin to fly out of control. Flight termination software, FTS. That's what that's used for. Now, Rocket Lab has been launching regularly out of New Zealand using its own flight termination software. It's on the rocket itself, and it's designed autonomously to destroy the rocket if it gets out of control, and they have actually had to use it to destroy several rockets out of New Zealand when they failed. So even though those launches were failures, they have demonstrated that their flight termination software works. But that wasn't good enough for NASA and the FAA and Wallops Island. So they spent 2 years rewriting software, which already existed. And then finally said you could launch late in December. And then the 14-day launch window got shrunk to only 2 days because both NASA and the FAA had to complete, quote, essential regulatory documentation for a launch, close quote, which in other words, paperwork, red tape. They couldn't get the paperwork done on time. And so Rocket Lab lost 12 out of its 14-day launch window. Well, on the 18th rolled around and the 19th rolled around, the weather was bad. They couldn't launch. And so now Rocket Lab has officially rescheduled this first Wallops Island launch to January, to its next launch window. And I have had some indications from people who love NASA and the paperwork that it wasn't NASA's fault this has been going on, but it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd because the flight termination software that Rocket Lab has would have been just fine. Interestingly enough, during the launch procedure on the 18th, I'm listening to the launch, there are like all these NASA people that have to approve the launch as they go through the checkoff, and none of those people exist in New Zealand. This is, I think, just simply a jobs program, and it's wasted a lot of time for Rocket Lab.
Aerojet Rocketdyne has been purchased for $4.7 billion. What does Aerojet Rocketdyne build, Bob?
They build rocket engines, and they've had problems in the last decade or so because they have been building them for the big space contractors and for government work, and so therefore they build very expensive rocket engines, take a long time to do it, and therefore nobody's interested in buying those engines anymore. They lost in competing with Blue Origin for the engines for the Vulcan rocket. They lost the competition. In a sense, it might have been a smart addition for ULA to take Aerojet Rocketdyne, but they didn't. So this company's had problems. And it's financially problems. And Lockheed Martin tried to buy it up last year, but the government said no, there would be monopoly issues with that. And so another space contractor, L3 Paris Technologies, has now announced a deal to buy Aerojet Rocketdyne for $4.7 billion. And I think it's a little bit higher than what Lockheed was going to offer. And I think this is going to go through for a variety of reasons. And if it does, it's going to be a great opportunity to streamline Aerojet Rocketdyne and clean that company up. Because right now, it's not selling as much as it should because its engines are not competitive. And there's a new market out there, a lot of new companies building rocket engines. And if they want to compete, they're going to have to fix things up. This is an opportunity to do that.
South Korea has achieved lunar orbit with Denuri. What is Denuri's mission?
Denuri's mission is to go into lunar orbit. It's a polar orbit. It has six instruments, one of which is an American camera. This is probably the most interesting. It's called ShadowCam. It's designed to take pictures into the permanently shadowed craters of the moon to see if they can find water. There are a bunch of other instruments to do study of the moon itself. For South Korea, though, this mission is mostly a technology engineering mission to show that they can do such a thing on their own, since even though it was launched by SpaceX, the satellite itself was pretty much built by Korea, and they really are trying to become an ambitious space faring nation, and so this is their first attempt to do this. It's the first time they've gone to another planet, so good for them, and it's now in orbit. It has a few more course corrections to make to get to its final research orbit, but so far everything is working fine.
What is Sky Rora?
This is another one of those rocket startup companies. In this case, though, it's a UK, British rocket startup. They actually have been trying to, their goal is to use hypersonic technology to launch their rockets to the upper stage. In other words, they wouldn't you bring oxygen along in the upper stage. It would use the oxygen in the atmosphere on the lower stage, one of the two stages, and which, of course, have been some people have been trying to do. Military has been trying to do it for missiles, but this would be the first rocket satellite company to try to do this. Well, their company's been under development. They haven't launched anything yet. They had a launch failure recently. They hired 6 months ago as their chief operating officer a former NASA manager named a guy by the name of Lee Rosen. Well, after 6 months, he's quit, and the only reason they give is for personal reasons. He's going to return to California. That quick exit from the company does suggest something's not quite right at Skyrora, especially with the launch failure. But it could just simply be that the job wasn't right for him. We don't know. We'll have to wait and see how Skyrora develops. Remember, in private enterprise, you get a lot of startups, a lot of people trying to follow their dreams, and not all succeed. A great percentage, in fact, fail. But the result is much better rockets and much better things down the road because of the competition.
I declare this the best story of the decade. Well, a competition, but one of the best stories of the decade. Apollo 11 lunar module. Where is it, Bob?
We do not know where the Eagle Lunar Module ascent stage is. This is the ascent stage used by Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin to lift off from the lunar surface and then dock with the Columbia Apollo capsule, get onto the Apollo capsule. They then abandoned the lunar module in orbit, Eagle in orbit, and they came back to Earth. And the thing was in lunar orbit. Now, it's assumed always lunar orbit's unstable and that over time that orbit would eventually become unstable enough that the thing would crash on the lunar surface. That's been assumed by all lunar orbits. But a researcher who was curious about this, he started out by looking at a different Apollo ascent stage lunar module and discovered that that module could still be in orbit and doing a simulation, a computer simulation of what the orbit was doing. So he then looked at the Eagle's orbit and he found the same thing. That might not be on the surface. It might not have crashed. It might still be in orbit around the moon. And so we might have two different lunar modules, ascent stages, still orbiting the moon that could be recovered and brought back to Earth. Now, I reported this earlier when he first published back in 21, but I saw more material and thought it was worth publishing again because this is a big deal. If we could find those two modules still in orbit and capture them, they're some of the most historic, important space artifacts that exist in the universe, and they could be brought back to Earth.
Is NASA looking, Bob? Is there any?
No one's looking. No one's looking right now. I think, though, as more orbiters get into lunar orbit, there's going to be better opportunity to do a look for this. But no one at this moment is looking for these things. We have not had contact with these orbiters, these modules now since the early 70s. Both of them are dead. There's no way they don't communicate back. There's no communication. You have to see them, and they're very tiny. And so we'll just have to wait.
We can track near-Earth objects this small. And we can backtrack them and forward track them into the future. So isn't that the same geometrical problem we have with finding Apollo 11 ascent stage?
To a certain extent, that's correct, but you have to really be looking for it. And, for example, when they look for near-Earth objects, they're not looking at the moon. They're looking out away from the Earth because
right.
The moon's bright. It makes it hard to see. So they're not looking in that spot. In addition, it's not, transits here against the sun would change the albedo, the brightness, but the moon is not that bright, so the changes wouldn't be as obvious. This is not necessarily an easy problem. It's a doable thing, but someone's going to have to do it, and at the moment, it's not the priority.
All right, Bob, but one more detail. This would be required, if this was the high seas, this would be salvage, and whoever recovers it would possess it.
That's right. sooner or later, in the near future, because of private enterprise moving into this domain, somebody is going to say, hey, I could make a lot of money doing this. However, once again, private enterprise, the way the law is written and the way NASA approaches things, NASA's going to claim it owns it, and you can't make a dime from it. What will end up happening is in negotiations, NASA will agree to pay a company to salvage this for them at some point down the road.
Once upon a time, there was a best-selling novel and movie, Raise the Titanic. I'm looking forward to Recover the Ascent Stage. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're heading to Mars, exploring.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.